Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, well, let's get this in while we can. Yeah.
He's sad, little guy.
Tony Fauci's theme music, thanks to Five Times August, one of the great political songs of all time. Fauci was making the rounds yesterday.
Was he trying out for a position on all these news stations? I mean, he was everywhere.
No, he was doing reputation management is what he was doing. He was on with Neil Cavuto on Fox Business. Regrets, Tony Fauci? He has not a few.
Do you regret particularly the last one, the shutdown, the sweeping shutdown that some said made things worse?
No, I don't, Neil. And in fact, I think we need to make sure that your listeners understand I didn't shut down anything. There was a lot of consideration among the White House task force that we were reaching a point where the hospitals, such as in New York City and other places, were being strained to the point of practically being overwhelmed. And when Dr. Birx and I came with the proposal that we take 15 days to essentially get to the point where we slow, if not shut, some things down, not completely, and the record will show, Neil, that we didn't recommend shutting everything down. We wanted to cause a pause to remember the terminology to flatten the curve.
But in retrospect, and we did that, do you regret that it went too far? Whatever your original intentions were, and it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback here, but that it went too far, that particularly for kids who couldn't go to school except remotely, that it's forever damaged them.
Well, I don't think it's forever irreparably damaged anyone, but I think obviously, and if you go back and people selectively, Neil, pull things out about me. I was also one of the people that said we've got to do everything we can to get the children back in school. Go back to some of the clips that you and I had on your own show when I've said that it's very important that we protect the children from the collateral effects of keeping them out of school. Go to the record. I have said that so many times.
So if we had something, God forbid, like this again, Doctor, I'm sorry.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The lockdown was not his idea. The remote learning, not his idea.
He's a lying sack of you-know-what.
2 weeks to flatten the curve, 2 weeks to slow the spread, that's his idea. The record will reflect. Okay, so the lockdown wasn't his idea. You know, he's just someone who was following the data and the science and offering recommendations.
It was his idea. And Trump went along with it, don't forget.
Sure, so if it wasn't your idea...
Whose idea was it?
Would you do it again?
I think we should always learn lessons from the past, Neil. That is one of the things about medicine and science and public health that I have tried to do for my entire 50-year career, to be flexible and open-minded. So if you look at things we may not have done perfectly or even not done well, you go back and you try to learn from that. Maybe people can learn that if they would encourage people to get vaccinated, we may not have had so many deaths. So I think the people who criticize me should talk about their own reluctance to promote vaccination. That's the point that I would make in rebuke of that.
Oh, there's no question. So would you lock down again? The point I would make is get vaccinated.
Because people wouldn't have died if you got vaccinated. Okay.
To the question of would you ever lock down again, says, look in the mirror for those people who were not vociferous advocates of put your mask on and take your jab.
And shut up. And don't push back. Because if you do, you don't care. You're killing people.
Something else, too, about this. You know, it's he did the same thing on Maddow, which we'll get to. You know, mistakes were made. Even the things we didn't do well, we need to learn from them. What were they? In your estimation, what were they? Because I don't hear anything. What I hear is him trying to turn this back on people who disagreed with his mantras over the course of the last 2 years.
He is science, Dan.
That's what we were told. That's right.
He is God. People loved him so much they wore his face on socks and pillows. And T-shirts.
No regrets.
No regrets. God.
Mistakes were made. Don't know what he considers mistakes or things that the CDC did badly because there's no detail there. And Cavuto Cavuto failed to follow up with and demand specifics as he should have.
Yeah.
Cavuto, not a great interviewer,
no,
by the way.
Not.
I mean, I like Neil, okay, but it's like, hey, so what do you think about this? I mean, that's not a question.
Well, there's no pushback details.
That's right. And that's you just said we did some things badly. And now you're talking about people who weren't cheerleaders for the vaccination mandates. So what did you do badly before you tell us what everybody else did badly?
I don't like to that he said that, you know, nobody was irreparably damaged because he doesn't know because he's not with the children. He doesn't know what they did to our children because he doesn't see them or interact with them.
Well, here's the other thing about the lockdowns, including the school shutdowns and the remote learning. You know, the record will reflect, you know, I never said, well, then how did it happen? Did you speak out against the lockdowns? I don't recall that. Does the record reflect that? The remote learning. You go back and you look and I said, well, children need to be back in school as soon as possible. Well, as soon as possible.
I said that a year and a half
later.
What
date is that? What date is as soon as possible? And you can say things and not mean them to sort of placate people, which is what he admitted he did when it came to herd immunity. I'm telling people what I think they can handle. Remember he told the New York Times that?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, he is just a politician in the worst connotation of that word.
Well, being a media whore yesterday and going to every station, he just wants to be loved because I think he got the boot and that's why he said, you know what, sure, I'll go on your station. He went on Fox News. Hello?
Well, this is all reputation management. This is all,
well, okay.
I don't want to let the history be written by what he would consider Monday morning quarterbacks, people that did not buy the advice, recommendations, guidances, mandates, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, they're sullying his good name and his stellar record. That's what this is for him. No question about it. And it's important for everybody else, even if you're Fauci'd out, because you cannot let the COVIDians write the history of what happened as they're trying to rewrite what happened in real time. Susie, Northside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Amy, you had said that Trump went along with it. I remember Trump saying many, many times, we can't shut our country down. But Fauci was looked at like a god. Nobody would listen to Trump. But he said many times, we can't shut our country down.
Well, right.
Well, we didn't shut down air travel because people have freedom of movement.
No, but
in certain places.
But the problem, Susie, is nobody will listen to Trump. He's the president of the United States.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, exactly. But it was his call, not Fauci's. Fauci was treated like a god because Trump let Fauci get away from him. That was a Trump choice to keep Fauci and Birx and let them ride point and add nobody for 2 years until Atlas finally came down the road. That was Trump's. Yeah. Those were Trump's decisions. So, no, he bears responsibility for terrible public policy that was made during that time, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Susie. Call back anytime.
This is the point. Accountability up and down the decision chain. Happy to ascribe accountability for Trump for the choices he made, whatever the pressures and context. I mean, he's the president. The pressure and context with every decision. And Tony Fauci is saying, hey, what about you? Don't look at me. What about you? You're pointing a finger at me. Four are pointing back at you. Okay.
Well, I'll never forget when Trump said, we're going to open. Everything will be open again by Easter. And Fauci's behind him, you know, rolling his eyes. Who's in charge here?
Yeah, where did the, I mean, to, Susie,
I mean, we'll give to, people false
to
hope.
Susie's point, where did the recommendation for the lockdowns ultimately come? From Trump? Obviously not.
No.
Karen Beecher.
Well, good morning. And once again, good thing it's radio, so nobody can see my face after listening to that thing blab on. I have one word, many syllables. Liar.
All right. Thanks, Karen. Appreciate it.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and we were talking about that sad little man, Tony Fauci's Fare Thee Well tour, as he does brand management, his brand, yeah, and to some extent the CDC's, asked on Cavuto about lockdowns. Hey, that wasn't me.
Oh, it was me.
Don't pin that on Tony Fauci. Well, we've got some archival comments from Tony Fauci.
Oh, good.
He acts like, I mean, maybe he just believes his own lies. He acts like this stuff can't be pulled forward to compare what he's saying today versus what he said for the past 2+ years. Here it is. Here's first him on Cavuto yesterday.
Do you regret particularly the last one, the shutdown, the sweeping shutdown that some said made things worse?
No, I don't, Neil. And in fact, I think we need to make sure that your listeners understand I didn't shut down anything.
I recommended to the president that we shut the country down. And the only way to do that is by draconian means of essentially shutting down a country. We know that we can do that if we shut down.
Well, I think one of the things you really need to do, to the extent that you can shut down temporarily the country, I think is important.
Well, if I knew at the time that shutting down would have such a dramatic effect on controlling the spread, obviously we would have shut down earlier.
There are those who say you shut down your destructive things by disrupting the economy. And others say, well, if you save so many infections by shutting down, why didn't you shut down 2 weeks earlier?
But I don't regret saying that the only way we could have really stopped the explosion of infection was by essentially, when I say shutting down, I mean essentially having the physical separation and the kinds of recommendations that we've made.
You've been a big fan of Cuomo and the shutdown in New York. You've lauded New York for their policy. New York had the highest death rate in the world. How can we possibly be jumping up and down and saying, oh, Governor Cuomo did a great job? He had the worst death rate in the world.
No, you misconstrued that, Senator. Huh.
The vaudeville music is perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's Tony Fauci. And, you know, would he do it again?
Oh, yeah.
Get vaccinated. That's his response. And don't ever cross him again or any of his friends in the public health sphere.
And get ready in a few weeks for the new booster shot.
Uh-huh.
That's going to attack the Omicron, although I think we've moved on from the Omicron.
Here's, by the way, Walensky, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, she of the CDC reorg that provides the cover for Tony Fauci's exit.
I'm just going to call her Special Forces.
She, well, yeah, that's not bad. She came on to a Cavuto show as well, following up on Fauci. She wasn't so keen on talking about lockdown. She doesn't want to wear the jacket for that. Neither does Tony Fauci. But at least she has plausible deniability because she wasn't there.
You know, many of those lockdowns predated me at the CDC. Here is what I can tell you since my time at the CDC and watching it even beforehand. And that is, there were important decisions that we had to make in imperfect time with imperfect data. And we always updated those decisions as those data were evolving. As we got more data, we had more information by which we could make better decisions. So I don't necessarily want to revisit the question of lockdowns that predated me.
No, sure
but
you
what
don't.
I will say is we have updated our guidance in the context of new information, and sometimes we have to make a decision before we have all the information that we want. And I've said to our agency, not making a decision is a decision in and of itself.
Wow, that's a powerful treatise on executive management. Give me a break. Where did you get that one? Life's Little Instruction Book? These people are our experts, honestly. Sophomoric is generous.
Well, I still just am upset at how much power Fauci had.
Well,
here's
the other thing, though, that's
one
happening.
Opinion.
Listen to what they're saying. We didn't have all the information, imperfect decisions based on imperfect knowledge. Uh-huh. You have to understand that. And when we got more information, we were flexible and we changed policy.
That's bull jive.
It's complete.
We were stuck in hell for 2 full years.
It's completely untrue, but this is what they're saying. Fauci tried the same fog of war nonsense on Maddow after he got done propagandizing to Cavuto.
To do things, be they lecture or write or get involved in situations where, I mean, the things that we thought we knew in the beginning turned out as the months went by to not be the case, which really forced us to adapt and to change some of our policies and recommendations. That was interpreted by many as flip-flopping or not really knowing what's going on, when it really was the evolution of the science. So one of the lessons that I hope we learn is that we've got to be prepared, we've got to be able to respond, but we've also got to be flexible. You know, some of our military colleagues have told us it's kind of like when you're at a war, you can plan what you're going to do, but when the bullets go off and the cannons started firing, then it becomes the fog of war, and you've got to be flexible enough to respond. I hope that that lesson has been learned, and as we look forward to the inevitability of future outbreaks, we will not forget that lesson.
Oh, Tony Fauci is still teaching, still leading us. The idea that the fog of war, and then we understood the reality on the ground and we pivoted, we were flexible. For 3 years, it was wash your hands 6 feet apart, wear a mask, and then ultimately when they came online, get the jab. That was it.
We canceled Thanksgivings and Thanksgivings. And Christmases.
Yeah, I know what we did, but that's a symptom. Where was the change in policy?
There wasn't change in policy because he's lying.
It was just those. It was this refrigerator magnet. Wash your hands 6 feet apart. Wear a mask, and then
wash your groceries.
Get a jab. That was it.
Sanitize everything. Do what we say. And the only freedoms you had is if you went to free states like Utah or Florida, or where they had leadership that was normal. What Fauci should have done is just did what Sweden do. Take a deep breath. Relax. Don't shut everything. Schools were never shut down. There was no mask mandates ever, except if you went into hospitals.
Well, I'm proud to say on this show, we were one of the first, if not the first in the nation, to pick up on what Johan Giesecke, the former top state epidemiologist in Sweden, had to say before Tegnall came in. This is in March or early April. I can't remember exactly. But he basically provided an explanation of what was going to happen and what did happen. And in this exchange, he talked about, hey, come to me a year from now. Come to me a year from now and take a look at people who are moving headlong into locking down, trying to prevent the spread of infection, which you're not going to prevent. And we'll see. We'll see if Sweden's light touch approach was more effective than those who took a heavier hand. And of course, he was right. And very few people know who Johan Gusecki is, and very few people even reference the Swedish approach, even though there were some fits and starts in Sweden, too. But the Scandinavian countries that took a much lighter touch, particularly with respect to schools and kids. And that's just, you know, been rat-holed by the D.C. press corps because there's no defense to what we did when you look at the options that were pursued more to the betterment of their citizens by other countries.
They vilified them. I remember they sent Roger Engel there. So you would never even know COVID's going on. He's walking through the streets of Sweden and stores are open and people are, you know, going on with their lives.
Speaking of masks, I thought this was funny, just as a quick aside.
Yeah.
A Beverly Hills boutique, Kitson on Robertson Boulevard in Beverly Hills, has posted a new sign.
Oh, what?
Due to safety of our staff and assets of store, we do not allow the wearing of face masks.
Oh, because people use the face masks to hide when they robbed and looted stores all over the country.
Right. It turns out that there are other priorities that compete with feeling good about yourself and feeling like you have a force field on by wearing a surgical mask. Yeah. One other thing, too, since Fauci said, you know, no one was irreparably harmed. Good book. We're going to get this author on. Anya Kamenetz, who is Kamenetz, I guess.
Don't look at me for help.
No, I'm not. Anya Kamenetz.
Oh, wow.
The Stolen Year NPR Education Reporter. This is who she is. NPR Education Reporter. The book, The Stolen Year. How COVID changed children's lives and where we go now. She basically calls the lockdowns, kids out of school, a crime perpetrated on U.S. children. One that, quote, increased inequality and destroyed individual hopes and dreams. One whose impact can be measured for a generation. But Tony Fauci on Cavuto just brushes that off. Nobody was irreparably harmed. Don't
just
give me this irreparably
fly
harm.
Over the plate.
Don't give me this irreparably harm business. One more from Fauci because this is fun.
Oh, I can't wait.
To show what a political animal he is. So it was, don't talk to me about lockdowns. Talk to me about people who were not cheerleading the jab. Don't talk to me about kids not going to school. I said they should go to school. Didn't do anything about it. I said we need to get them back to school as soon as possible, and no one's irreparably harmed, so don't give me that business. Fog of war mistakes. We could have done things better. I have no specific offering of what we could have done better or any mistakes I made. And then the other problem here is this environment.
Oh.
Where the country has gone, where untruths are being normalized. And Tony Fauci is a victim of this.
Of course.
But what has spilled over and really, in many respects, impeded a proper response to a public health challenge is something that we see that goes well beyond public health. It's a complete distortion of reality. I mean, a world of where untruths have almost become normalized, how we can see something in front of our very eyes and deny it's happening. I mean, that's the environment we're living in. You could look at January 6th on TV, and you have some people who actually don't believe it happened. How could that possibly be? And it's now spilling over in denial about public health principles. So
no one's denying that January 6th ever happened. That is, stay in your lane, buddy. It's just the way the verbiage that's being used to describe it. Some think it's a riot. Some think it's an insurrection.
Who
the hell does he think he is? I can't stand him. I don't want to.
He can't
feel nauseous right now.
Can't stay in his lane. And the choice of comparison or the choice of example to offer so that he could bring it back to public health of January 6th. If people see something and they don't believe it's real, what do you mean, like Hunter Biden's laptop? Oh, you didn't want to make
the images on Hunter Biden's laptop?
That's not the example he wants to use. He goes to January 6th. Tell me again how this is a man of science and data, that this is science. He's the embodiment of science and data and not some political animal. That's all he really is. That's what we found out during the pandemic. 40 years of being a political animal and walks away just like a politician would from things he said and did as he tries to rewrite history in real time. Cannot let him and his devotees get away with it.
No.
Too important. One thing, too.
Yes.
You cannot at the same time say that what was done did lasting damage to people's economic security, to kids' intellectual, social, emotional development. You cannot at the same time say that and say, I don't want to talk about Fauci. I don't want to talk about the CDC. I just want to move on from COVID and let them have the run of the field. You can't say it's so important because of the damage that was done, but then let's not talk about it. Let's just move on. No. That doesn't wash.
He took away children's life experiences that they can never, ever get back. You could have all the money in the world, but you can never have your graduation or your prom or then sports for a year. I mean, my son went off to college. I felt so robbed because he got robbed of seasons of sports and interactions and development with other children.
Jordan and Antioch.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. So, no irreparable harm, huh? I bet John Anthony would have something different to say about that.
I know.
I bet
the Buckner family.
I bet the people in Highland Park would have something to say about that if they actually looked at the causes of that. I bet you all the kids who missed their scholarships because they missed their junior, senior breakout years would have something to say about that. The reason that there's people that deny what you say, they're scumbag, is because you denied every single thing that came from the other side, science, data, and everything else, and you buried those people and ruined their livelihoods. I can't recall what congressman said it, but I hope he's spot on when he said that he had better have really good records when he leaves and retires because he's going to need them. If the Republicans do come back and take the House and Senate, I hope they perp walk this guy.
Oh, they will.
During a congressional hearing. And I would, and a bit of advice to those that might have anything to do with it. You might want to put Anthony Fauci on a short chain so that in December he can't run off to his villa in Europe where there's no extradition treaty that he bought with taxpayer dollars and make sure he stays here before the new Congress is sworn in. But there's no irreparable damage. Are you kidding me?
I know.
Are you kidding me?
Thanks for the call, Jordan. Yeah.
All those suicides.
Don't get too excited about what may happen to Tony Fauci and this idea that he's going to be perp walked or he's going to face any sort of criminal action. Highly unlikely. We'll see. But I think it's highly unlikely. A good level of skepticism there is warranted.
Well, remember he said he may he may testify. He may. Oh, okay. In front of a House committee if they call him to be.
Yeah.
What he said yesterday on CNN.
Yeah, and then you get into the subpoenaing and so on and so forth. But we're a long way from any sort of legal reckoning with respect to Tony Fauci. You know, frankly, just continuing to present the information, present his statements today versus what they were for the better part of 3 years. And try to, you know, get people who were blinded back into some place of at least semi-reasonableness, understand what actually happened versus what they thought would happen if you could pull them away from their Fauci shrines. You know, he's doing this one other thing, too, in addition to all the fog of war and blah, that we went over. I always keep an open mind. I'm Mr. Open Mind. And so the other point that we've made routinely that Jordan just made about what he attempted to do, he and Francis Collins and that whole establishment attempted to do, to shut down, vilify scientists who disagreed with them, send their toadies in the press corps after them.
Yank their social medias.
That was, big tech, of course.
I mean, we got pulled off of YouTube how many times?
That
so we had a different opinion than Fauci.
Yeah, which is, that's, nobody should be. This should be especially something that affects everybody so deeply as pandemic response policy did. It should be as open a forum as possible, short of, you know, advocating violence. But particularly when you're talking about experts in their chosen fields, and to not only to not disagree with them, to attempt to silence them and then essentially smear them as dangerous or ill-informed rather than addressing what they were saying on the merits. Martin Kulldorff from Harvard. I mean, I'll keep repeating the names. Bhattacharya from Stanford. Gupta from Oxford.
These are from reputable hospitals and universities.
And that's something else that should be that should be put back to people too that are still in this COVIDian fog. You defer to experts. You know, people, these overeducated, the people that Tucker Carlson was ridiculing on his show the other day after Fauci's announcement, brilliantly ridiculing. Yeah, you're so about credentials and education and expertise in a particular arena. How can you justify the way that scholars and scientists, academics, equally if not more credentialed than your Tony Fauci and the other people that you listen to on MSNBC or CNN or did for 2 years? How can you justify the way that was treated? How can you see those people silenced and say, I'm a person of science and data? You're not. And you're not a person of reason either. Tom in Blue Island.
Well, Dan, on that, to follow up on what you just said and what Amy said earlier, Fauci was in his lane because he was a politician. But I would argue that Fauci was allowed with Collins to bash guys like Jay Bhattacharya because Trump made the mistake of having Fauci and Birx up there. And he should have had Fauci or Birx and someone adamantly opposed to the lockdowns and everything to have given people a choice to see.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Trump's the president, and he's got to be blamed.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
I agree.
So do I.
And he didn't even fire them on the way out.
We have.
I was pissed.
We just gave him the names, and they were making their presence felt almost the entire time.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, Anatomy of the Left. We started talking about it yesterday. Anatomy of the Left, the example, the latest example, involves me because of this ad that I did for a PAC that I run that's involved in the governor's race, as anybody who listens to this show knows. And the response that it it drew from, not just from Triple Threat and Jelly Belly, but of course, in tow, their comm shop, the Chicago Springfield Press Corps. So the Sun-Times, the AFL-CIO, WBEZ, NPR Times, want to get the title right. The Tribune, I heard from all of them. And
they wanted a response?
Oh, yeah, they wanted a response, and they got the response. They got the same response that Natasha Karecki at NBC, now at NBC, got. And you had the opportunity to get a response from one of the sources herself, the mayor.
Yeah, I asked the question that that you're asserting that through this ad that they're pushing a false narrative about Chicago. Well, what's the false narrative, Madam Mayor?
It darkens my skin. I don't think there's any dispute that I'm African-American. I'm black, and I'm very proud of that. So why do you need to blacken what I look like to send this ad out to suburban communities? So that in and of itself would be offensive enough. But what it's doing is it's fear-mongering. It doesn't recognize the fact that, in fact, we are down 18% in homicides. We are down 18% in shootings. And it shows black men, I don't know where from, I don't even know if they're from Chicago, who are violent and looting. It is the ultimate dog whistle being propagated in support of Darren Bailey. So we live in a time where it's real easy to talk about what divides us, to show the vigils of that. But what we should be doing, if we're actually talking about a vision for the future, where you want people to support you, how about talking about what's possible and how we bring people together?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick message. And she didn't stop there, Dan. She had more.
Yeah, well, wait.
Okay.
That was plenty.
Oh, it gets better.
On the merits, it's what I said yesterday and what I said in the comments that I sent to all these outlets. These two, and I put them together, Lightfoot and Pritzker, are just two of the worst people on the planet. Good examples of some of the worst people on the planet. They're identitarian scum that prey on and foment racial animus to cover for their incompetence and awful public policy that destroys lives and cities and states. First of all, there was no darkening of anybody's skin. And she's black. Yeah, I'm aware. I think I'm the one who's been calling her Triple Threat for the last 3 years because she called herself Triple Threat. Black, lesbian, and
female.
And, oh, yeah, female. That, yeah, I almost forgot.
Don't forget, say please.
I mean, it's just so ridiculous because they don't want to address the substance of what has happened on their watch and what is coming to the suburbs because of legislation they supported, passed, and Jelly Belly signed. So instead, what do they go to?
They pull out the race card.
Of course.
Because you're making her look like a scary, and she was doing this, scary black woman.
It's just the most ridiculous thing. There's no need to overstate the case. By the way, the footage, I don't even know if it's from Chicago. Really?
It's got CWB written all over it. And
Well, that's one of the clips. The others are from news reports on WGN and so forth. Some of those videos went viral. They've become iconic examples of the lawlessness in Chicago. So she should recognize them. And she should recognize, you don't recognize the guy getting sucker punched on State Street? Maybe you should familiarize with yourself with the city, little woman.
Well, I brought that up. Like, I said, well, they did not change your appearance.
Didn't alter anything.
Yeah,
and that video is all from Chicago. They got that video
from
news stations.
We can prove that that's not true.
Okay, well, then prove it.
It's irrelevant.
I know. She should know what's going on in her own city.
No, forget even knowing what's going on in her city. It's just a straight up misdirection play. Don't talk about what has been done and what is going to be done in Chicago and the suburbs. Talk about the way I'm presented. To repeat, video from the web of her speech at City Club where she uttered the now infamous phrase, the summer of joy. This summer will be the summer of joy. And how's the summer of joy going for you? There have been 1,200 shootings in her summer of joy, 2,400 shootings this year. 1,400 shootings in the summer of joy. And the problem is how she's presented in delivering that now infamous remark. It's ridiculous. I don't change. I've never done that. Never said it, anything like that. You don't change the pigmentation of anybody's skin. I mean, you do the, you know, the slow-mo, the grainy right. footage. And but you've seen all this stuff before. And some commercials in terms of the coloration of the commercials because, you know, I'm talking about violent crime and lawlessness in Chicago and Illinois. So I'm sorry I didn't have a pastels with bumblebees and tulips. Obviously, it's going to present as ominous because it is ominous. And all these people can talk about, Lightfoot, Pritzker, the Chicago and Springfield Press Corps, all they can talk about is their effort to, you know, dissect the 32nd spot rather than talking about the coming impact of the Safety Act on the suburbs, such as has been delivered, because that's been de facto the approach in Cook County and the city of Chicago. Oh, by the way, and I'm scaring suburbanites, because that was the other thing that she said, and I want to respond to that. Scaring suburbanites. Am I scaring suburbanites?
No.
I'm sorry. The ad features two, I think, fairly well-respected suburban state's attorneys. One's a Republican, one's a Democrat, and they're just giving you chapter and verse. False narratives? Specifically, what's the false narrative about the Safety Act? Tell me what it is. What's the false narrative about the crime in Chicago and Cook County for the last 3 years under your tenure? What are we seeing from other states and communities? This yesterday, California District Attorney, Yolo County District Attorney, Jeff Riesig, Yolo County is Sacramento metro area. 70% of people released under mandated zero bail, which is what's going into effect statewide January 1 here. Mm-hmm. 70% of the people released under mandated zero bail go on to commit additional crimes, including violent offenses, robbery, and murder. There's simply no rational public safety related basis to continue such a practice post-pandemic, especially in light of the increasing violent crime rates across California. Is Jeff Riesig in Yolo County, is he scaring the residents of the greater Sacramento area, mayor, governor? I mean, honestly, if people fall for their race hustle again, then you deserve what you get. You deserve this post-apocalyptic city in which you live.
She wanted one more comment from the mayor.
But to use the oldest racist tropes that there are, to make the scary black woman even blacker, to show scary black men on TV, and to say to the suburbs, i.e. the white people, you don't want this coming to your town, so vote for Darren Bailey, that is the height of racism and cynicism, and we don't need it anywhere, certainly not in our politics, and we definitely don't mean it if we're going to try to bring people together.
You're such, this is such a cheap carnival demagogue. And also, you know, the tough and rumble triple threat with her big dong. Oh, why don't you come on this show anymore, little woman?
She used to all the time.
If she did in the primary in 2019 when she thought it was to her benefit. But no, she just stands from behind the dais and, you know, offers talk about these same old tropes. The same old tropes from the race hustlers. She's no different than Al Sharpton. She's no different from the pigs in a blanket, fry 'em like bacon, Black Lives Matter Marxist, because that's what she is. Or that's what she's, that's the cloth that she's donning in order to win re-election. That's where she thinks she needs to be to have a shot to win re-election, because their people are so disgusted with the job that she's done and what the city has become. By the way, you don't need an ad from me to tell suburbanites not to come to Chicago.
They're already doing that.
They don't need any persuasion because they see the same things that we all see. And by the way, that's black, white, Latino. The suburbs is not, you know, an Andy Griffith show. I don't know when the last time Lightfoot was out to the suburbs. There are large minority populations throughout the collar counties. She's ridiculous.
Well, and I got to, the reason why there was a press conference yesterday is because Chicago came in fifth place in this Bull Jive Community Justice Action Fund violence prevention competition. Are you kidding me? We're celebrating because she claims that shootings are down 18% from last year. Homicides are down 18% from last year.
Whatever.
It's just a bunch of beautiful lies. No, but she turned on the media. She had some words for the media.
I just urge you to be careful with the words that you use because saying significant to the Loop and River North compared to what people experience on the west side in neighborhoods like West Garfield Park or Austin, there's going to be an imbalance, and I think you're going to be missing a lot. However, having said that, if you haven't historically experienced crime and you're feeling it now, you're going to feel unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we do.
If you haven't been victimized by crime, but you have been victimized now, you're not going to like it. Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you.
By the way,
the whole press conference was
the whole receiving, how people receive words, and the if you're so worried about minority neighborhoods in the South and West Sides that are beset by violence, then why don't you do something about it? Rather than telling us how to talk about the spike in violence in other neighborhoods, too, as you've given the city completely over to predators. I honestly would be fascinated to talk to anyone who listens to this pablum and nods their head. Oh, yeah, she's making sense.
People there were doing it.
Well, I'm talking about real people,
right,
not
people.
Reporters. I'm talking about human beings.
Well, they all wanted to see the ad after it was over, and they all sat down, and we all watched it. And I'm like, well, that's from Chicago. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's from your station, Channel 9. That's from your station.
Of course.
They're like, okay, yeah. Well, they had never seen it before. Can you believe that?
Of course I can.
That's all right. At least they wanted to learn, so I'm not.
The ostrich effect in this city and state? Are you kidding? I'd be surprised if it wasn't the case. Joan and Wilmette, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I saw the ad, and I actually think that it's great. I mean, it states the truth and the facts. I give it an A++. And, you know, Lightfoot talks about fear-mongering. She's the one who's actually doing the fear-mongering. It's right out of Rules for Radicals. She's basically implying that if someone shows an ad that has some truth in it, then we're racist. You know, she's shutting us down. She's the one who's creating the fear. The real story, though, is Tammy Duckworth endorsed Lightfoot for a second term.
That's right.
What do you think about that, Mr. Prof?
I think that Kathy Salvey should be using that against Tammy Duckworth in her race. Thanks for the call,
yeah,
Joan.
She should be getting
Appreciate
ads out. I mean, the guy's 3 months away.
I'm sorry. It's so interesting, too, thinking about Lightfoot's words. So, you know, public safety is colorblind. Black, white, Latino, Asian, everybody deserves the same level of public safety. They're not getting it, is what I heard from Lightfoot, but I'm the racist. What am I in charge of? What are you in charge of? Phil and Darian.
Hey, good morning, guys. Look at it this way. I mean, this is how ridiculous this sounds, okay? She is proud to be a black woman, but you're portraying her, or somebody is portraying her, to be more dark. Well, Dan, if she's proud to be a black woman, she should be thanking the ad for making her look more black. Well, I mean, the people that voted for her that are dark-skinned are thinking, wait a minute, she's proud to be black, but she don't want to be that black. I mean, really, I'm 100% Italian. If somebody takes a picture of me and makes me look more Italian, I'm going to be calling them and thanking them.
Thanks, Luca. It's just such a ridiculous accusation. Lori Lightfoot's black. Yeah, this is just in. I don't care if she's polka-dotted. And the same thing with the governor. And the same thing with all these public officials. I couldn't care less. These are the people who are obsessed about obsessed with counting by race, not me. But of course they have to project it onto me because, as I said, what else do they have to talk about? Their accomplishments? We just went through the district-by-district crime stats yesterday, this piece that Matt Rosenberg did at WirePoints. And she's up there cherry-picking, you know, late August, a slight decline in murders where we had, you know, 25-year highs last year. And patting herself on the back. And then she turns around and says, but be careful about your words because some people are you know.
Experiencing crime for the first time.
Some people are experiencing crime for the first time and other people experience crime on a daily basis. But you got everything under control and things are going well. It's the summer of joy. Okay.
Carjacking's up 62%. I love CWB Chicago. Okay, Lori, we'll report the numbers. Since you took office, overall major crimes up 16%, murders up 33%, robbery up 5%, theft up 32%, and motor vehicle theft carjackings up 62%. But now everything's fine here.
We're
making progress. Love me.
George and Moni.
Hey, Dan, you're right over the target, man. She's just a 2022 sweaty Nixon.
Thanks for the call. Vince, St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. They say bring people together.
Yeah.
They don't do any. I'm waiting for that. They use that key word, and it says, okay, bring people together. Magically, we all come together. Hallelujah. Okay, isn't she the one about the press? We want more blacks and Hispanics at the press ask questions. Did I hear that right?
Yeah. So, no, she wouldn't talk to us on her second anniversary because I'm white. She would not give me an interview.
Bring people together, except the people who disagree with me, and they're obviously white supremacists because that's the only way they would disagree with me, right? Thanks for the call, Vince. Yeah, bring people together, save our democracy. Rinse and repeat. That should be enough. That's what they think. We'll find out if they're right.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the kids are back in school. What's happening in the classroom?
Oh, yeah. We want to hear from parents, too. 312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro answer line. Or you can text us at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Naperville third grade teacher Nick Cosme.
Oh, boy.
He paints his nails like a woman does. He's teaching 8-year-old boys in his Elmwood School classroom. Mm-hmm. How to do the same. Huh. I have a little nail painting party for the 30-year-old boys, the third grade boys in Elmwood School in Naperville.
I did that to Peyton and Eli when they were in second grade.
Yeah, that's a little bit different, you know, playing with your kids at home.
Yeah.
Than it is having the teacher.
Well, they wanted their nail polish. Right. It is different.
Yeah.
And if I was a parent, I'd want to definitely have a say and whether or not my son got his nails painted.
Because
that's not something you do in school, ever. It's inappropriate.
I remember being at my grandparents' house when I was a kid, and I was fascinated by my great aunt's earring. She had the clip-on earring.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I put a clip-on earring on. Now, that's a little bit different. And by the way, I wasn't questioning my sexuality at the time. I wasn't on my gender journey at the time. But that's a little bit different than if said the teacher at St. Michael's would have said, everybody bring in your great aunt's jewelry and we're going to have a jewelry party.
Well, even if it was a female teacher, I would not want her painting my kid's nails because it's none of her business.
Well,
none whatsoever.
Shouldn't you be on like long division or something in third grade?
Yeah, maybe.
Nick Cosme asked his new students to announce their pronouns, suggesting the boys in his class might ask him to refer to them as she, not he. Also read a book about a boy who likes princesses, fairies, and things, not for boys, quote unquote. In My Shadow is Pink, a young boy who likes to wear dresses inspires his father to also wear a dress. I can't wait. I can't wait for all of those beta Naperville dads to be walking around the Riverwalk in dresses, you know, and to be an ally with their son. And Nick Cosme, their son's third grade school teacher. What do you think?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Add this to the reading list, required reading, My Shadow is Pink. We've got more. My Shadow is Pink. In one passage, the book shows a burly father with a mustache wearing a dress with his hand around his son's collar, consoling him over his reluctance to wear a dress in school. See, it goes in both directions. The dads,
right,
you know, pay it forward with the dress wearing. But then also the...
Why is mom left out?
The son's... Mom?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Birthing person.
Yeah.
I would never not call myself a mom. That's such a proud label to have.
Well, they're not left out.
Well,
They're growing a mustache like dad.
I showed you the flight attendant I had, by the way, on American.
Yeah,
who had a
and
full,
the skirt.
Full beard, blonde hair on top, and 9-inch leg hair wearing a skirt. Which is fine. If you want to be fine, don't. Nobody needs to look at those.
Fine.
Lamps.
It's wonderful.
Oh, no. But people are so. I watched everybody get on the plane and people are literally gasping. But it was just. And her. I don't know what her name was. I mean, he was a lovely person. He, she, or whatever that was. But we don't need to see that. I don't need to see that on ladies, let alone men who are trying to be ladies.
According to DuPage Policy Journal, parents. Did complain to the school district about this teacher, this third grade teacher, Nick Cosme's behavior. Mm-hmm. The school reportedly said it supports lessons on cross-dressing and transsexuality.
Why is it? This is not
in its third grade curriculum. Of course it does.
What?
It's Naperville.
What is going on here? I don't even care if it's Chicago. That is no one's business. That should not be taught at all.
After the spokesman for District 203, school board elections coming up in the spring. Spokesman Alexander Maester, after listening to the concerns, our administrative team worked to fully understand the situation and found that the purpose of the lesson was to promote inclusiveness and student belonging. The reading of the book and the themes within the book align to Naperville 203's efforts to cultivate a culture of inclusion that values the dignity and uniqueness of each individual. My parenthetical mark, unless you're a Christian. Naperville 203. Naperville, it's one of the best places in the country to live. Great schools. Well, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Another great place to live. Great schools. Wilmette. North Shore. Wilmette Junior High. Kid first day of class for the kiddies at Wilmette Junior High. Big discussion about the social identity wheel. You know the social identity wheel.
No, I'm not familiar with the wheel.
Ethnicity. Let's go from right to left, from right to left in your on your radio dial. Ethnicity, resources, gender, attraction, national origin, first language, age, religious or spiritual, race. That's the wheel.
Okay.
Let's talk about it. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one. Physical, emotional, or developmental disability. Ability or disability.
Okay.
Please share only what you're comfortable with. We just want to get to know what we think we should know about you. So there's questions about the wheel. Identities you think about most often from the wheel. Identities you think about least often. Your own identities you would like to learn more about. Identities that have the strongest effect on how you see yourself. Identities that have the greatest effect on how others perceive you. Ethnicity, resources, gender, attraction, national origin, first language, physical, emotional, developmental, ability, disability, age, religious or spiritual, race, ethnicity. Back to ethnicity at the top. Talk about our identities. Let's obsess about ourselves and our non-behavioral characteristics. I mean, yeah, I get it. The things that inform who we are, sure, okay. Is that something that needs to be driven by teachers and the administration. I thought part of education was separating the things that are important from the things that are less important, or at least having a discussion about them. What's more important, your resources or your character? Your national origin or your character? Because I don't know, I'm from a bygone era where education was, at least in part, and a significant part, was supposed to be character formation.
Right.
So is it more important to talk about my race, or is it more important to talk about the importance of honesty? Is it more important to talk about these social identity categories on the wheel? Or is it more important to talk about the cardinal virtues, essentially? What should we have kids explore? Should we have them engaged in endless navel-gazing about themselves? Or should we have them be thinking about, again, just to use as a baseline, the cardinal virtues and how important those are, how they play out in the real world, how you'll be challenged to abide those virtues, and that living a virtuous life requires courage and thoughtfulness? Because, you know, if you get the cardinal virtues right, then all this other stuff sort of falls into place. You don't need to be forever lectured about creating a culture of inclusion. Yeah, I got it. I'm good. I understand the basis on which we make judgments in this world. And it's not race or national origin or first language or resources or ethnicity. I mean, this seems innocuous enough, probably, to some of you. It's not. It's not. It turns your children into ill-informed solipsists. So do you want to have schools be in the business of character formation? Is that what you think you're getting? Or do you want them to just be trained to just be, daffy, myopic, boring, frankly, political activists?
312-642-5600. You can also text us. We received a text message about the third grader in Naperville. Dan and Amy, I would get my kid out of that third grade classroom as quick as possible.
My Shadow is Pink. That's the book of choice for Nick Cosme over at Naperville 203 for the third graders. Here's another one to put on the reading list. Rick is the name of the book by Alex Gino. This is featured at Westlake Middle School in Montgomery County, Maryland. Of course, Montgomery County, Maryland. Sort of like their version of the North Shore. We think you'll love exploration of self-expression and exploring your own identity through the eyes of Rick! Gino's book will enable us to explore gender identity, self-expression, friendships, and learn the importance of standing up for one another. That's from the school's website. It's not even from the book jacket. The school couldn't be more excited about it. The book features a 12-year-old boy who's encouraged to question his sexual orientation. Another child undergoes a gender transition. A third kid dances as a drag queen.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's the in thing to do right now.
At the end of the book, the students in Rainbow Spectrum, this club, I guess, featured in the book, put on a cabaret for money in which one of the students dances as a drag queen. The goal, according to the school, the middle school, is to continue to raise awareness of the value of diversity and take a stand as allies when we see injustice. Yeah. Okay. Jody in Plainfield.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, personally, I think he should be fired. Now, unless that's part of the curriculum to teach them cosmetics. If I had a child at that age, I'd be putting him in private school. Actually, my kids went to private school, but I said, you know, I have hired people that have, that do things outside of a work environment. I hired a person who was a tattoo model, and they don't work in education. What they do once they leave the building has nothing to do with what they, you know, they're allowed or what the standards are for the workplace.
Thanks for the call, Jody. Chris and Carrie.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was last week I was taking my daughter to school out in Arizona, and while she was moving in, I took a walk around the university. And I was walking next to a couple guys, and they were talking about getting a job this school year, and they were having a conversation whether or not they should use pronouns and put them on the application. So I listened to them for a minute or so, and then I just turned to them because I had to go left. They were going straight, and I said, "Hey guys," I said, "bear this in mind." I said, "The guy that's hiring you is, or person that's hiring you is probably older than you. And if you use your pronouns, they're going to think you're a lunatic. Do not do it." And they kind of thanked me and went on their way.
Thanks, Chris. Clay and Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Don't doubt for one second that this is not in even the elementary schools. I was recently doing work throughout the north side of Chicago here, and they don't even care. They just openly post about it now. It's wide open in the front, including a book. It was Melissa's crossed out, and the name's like George on it or something like that. But it's about a fourth grade trans student. And they're starting to put tampon dispensers in the boys' room in elementary schools.
Oh, yeah, by law.
Elementary schools.
It's by Illinois law.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And handing out condoms.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Appreciate it. Frank in Arlington Heights, he's a teacher. Is Rick or what's the other one? Shadow Pink or something? What's the other?
I don't know, but I'll tell you, I teach high schoolers. You know what my advice to them every single year is?
My shadow is pink. My shadow is pink. Yeah.
No. My advice is you own your education as an individual.
Yeah.
You can sit there and you can be, you know, sit there in the class and do nothing and not put any effort. Or no matter which teacher, you know, which class you have, you can put forth the effort. You own your education. It's all about you making the effort. And that lights a lot of eyes up. It really does. So that's in the beginning of the year, and I think it helps. So that's the kind of stuff we should have teachers telling kids.
Frank, you've never painted the nails of kids in your class?
Not yet.
No.
You wouldn't touch them because you're not supposed to touch them.
I use a lot of markers on my whiteboard. I probably have the most markers out of any teacher in the United States.
I wish Amy would have heard that advice from you, Frank, when she was in school. It's so unfortunate. So, Frank, what impersonation did you kick off the year with?
I don't know if I've done too many yet. We got to get into historical figures. We're just doing the basic historical stuff yet.
Are you introducing new characters since you're the Frank Caliendo of K-12 education? Are you introducing new characters?
I'm always. It's one big variety show. I mean, I'm always doing new acts. And I'll tell you, how I'm working on right now is Darren Bailey.
Oh, give us some Darren Bailey. Why should we vote for you, Darren?
I need to be governor of Illinois, and we need to fire J.B. Pritzker. I think it's not good.
It's not bad. It's not bad. You know, you got to get the patter down a little bit more, but that's not bad. Yeah. You're in the ballpark.
I do.
All right.
Chicago's a hellhole.
The other day, so I feel bad, but I got a couple more. At the right time, I got one for you, Dan.
All right, very good.
Right moment. Talk to you later.
I'll look forward to that. Thanks, Frank.
Give my advice. Chicago's a hellhole. Don't I sound like him? A little bit?
Yeah. No. You need to workshop that a little bit, too.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The other day, Joe Scarborough, he's on that ghastly program on MSNBC.
Yeah, his wife is Mika. Sorry, excuse me.
Joyka.
Yeah, Joe and Mika. Do you notice that they're never in the same space, though?
I don't watch it. I just sort of keep track of it because we do this service for our listeners, so they don't have to.
Right.
But it's always good to know what the left is saying. And this is what they're saying. Joe Scarborough on he's very concerned about the sort of rhetoric directed at the FBI and the Department of Justice at present.
And this is more about, this is about far more than politics. This is a sort of rhetoric that led to Oklahoma City. The post Ruby Ridge, post Waco rhetoric, the militia rhetoric, the survivalist rhetoric that led to Oklahoma City. And if you don't care about innocent lives that are being targeted right now, then just know this. Oklahoma City, the tragedy of Oklahoma City, this sounds very crude and crass. It's just the truth. We were there. We Republicans were on the Hill when Bill Clinton was on the run. Oklahoma City re-elected Bill Clinton. I know it sounds that sounds really harsh, but it did. Because you know what? Collectively, Americans said, okay, this Republican movement, it's gone too far. These guys aren't conservative. They're radicals.
Terry Nichols, Timothy McVeigh, what?
The Oklahoma City bombers were Republicans? Were they precinct captains?
They were part of Michigan militia. They had, they were crazy.
You know, you want to play this rhetoric game too, like Scarborough and the left do intermittently. You know, the people that call everybody Hitler and then turn around in the next sentence and are demanding civil discourse. It's a fun little two-step they do. So then let's talk about the rhetoric that led to Waukesha. Well, which rhetoric was that, Joe? The parade massacre.
Yeah, the black guy murderer that nobody talks about or even...
What was the rhetoric?
Barely covered.
Whose rhetoric was responsible for the assassination attempt on Brett Kavanaugh? Whose rhetoric is responsible for the shooting at the GOP congressional softball practice? You want to play that game of anytime some nut commits an act of violence in furtherance of whatever he or she thinks is their like political charge or manifesto? You want to play that game? Who's responsible for Ted Kaczynski's bombing, 18 years of bombing and terrorizing people? I mean, he had a manifesto. He had particular viewpoints on technology and free society. Who's responsible for that? I mean, it's really despicable, despicable commentary from Scarborough. And it shouldn't be silenced. It should be addressed. And it should be debunked. And this whole play of trying to attach bad actions from one-offs to the Republican Party platform or to the rank and file Republican is noxious, and it's all coming from the left. January 6th, basically all Trump supporters are domestic terrorists. You didn't have to be there. You're still a domestic terrorist. You didn't have to break the law. You're still a domestic terrorist.
You voted for him. You're a domestic terrorist.
You're a school board member who opposes the sexualized curriculum of grade schools around the country. You're a potential threat to national security. Merrick Garland needs to get involved. Dispatch some of those G-men to monitor school board meetings in case anybody starts to ask uncomfortable questions about COVID policy or curriculum. Really tiresome. The right is pretty clear on this. Conservatives pretty clear on this. Equal protection under the law includes equal treatment under the law. We don't believe in the left's the law applies or does not apply to you based on your politics, which is a long-running approach that has just been taken to the next level recently. And that if you commit other regarding acts in contravention of the law, then you need to be prosecuted. And if you're a violent criminal, particularly a repeat violent criminal, then you need to be held over until trial. Again, what we're talking about and we're seeing in New York, what we're seeing in Chicago and Cook County, and what we're going to see statewide if that safety act isn't repealed, what we talked about earlier in the program. Another example out of Sacramento area, the county district attorney in Yolo County, 70% of those that were no cash bailed, that arrested and given a walk, committed another crime. Again, for repetition, to drive the point. Last year in Chicago alone, just last year, 74 people charged with killing or attempting to kill someone who were given a walk pending trial and it killed or attempted to kill someone else, resulting in another 111 victims that wouldn't have been victims if you kept predators behind bars pending the fulfillment of their due process rights. And so, lest we forget, because this is, should inform the midterms as well, in fact, there's a nice essay from David Dorn's widow, Ann Dorn, who we had on the show. She writes over at Fox News, "My husband, Captain David Dorn, was murdered in 2020, in the 2020 riots. His killer had helped dividing America." She writes, "David became a cop because when he was a little boy, he wanted to be a superhero, and he was a superhero. But if real life superheroes exist, so do supervillains. Those supervillains are people like the man who killed my husband. They are people like billionaire George Soros, who used the power and influence to promote extremist politics and fan the flames of division. There are people like Vice President Kamala Harris, who raised money for the rioters' bail funds, lest we forget, and the CEOs of prominent companies who blindly gave their support and money to this. If a foreign organization were tied to nationwide rioting in the United States, we'd probably call it a terrorist organization. Yeah, instead we call it Black Lives Matter." For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined by Congressman Brian Steil. He is the rep for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, just north of the Cheddar Curtain there. Brian, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we can't talk about the riots of the summer of 2020 without including everything that happened in Kenosha and Kenosha burning down. Since that's your district, where is Kenosha 2 years later?
You know, I spent the day in Kenosha yesterday talking with law enforcement officers, talking with people that were impacted by the riots from 2 years ago. Kenosha, it's a family-loving, great, hardworking community, and in many ways, Kenosha has fully come back. But in some ways, the scars remain. As we walked around yesterday, and I was joined by our Republican candidate for governor, Tim Michaels, and Attorney General candidate, Eric Toney in Wisconsin, you could still see areas of pavement that were charred where rioters burned things like city dump trucks. You could see buildings that still were boarded up that were burned out by rioters. You saw empty lots where buildings were destroyed. But I'll tell you what was most impactful was talking to folks who were terrified for three nights when there was not sufficient resources to restore public safety. Our governor says, our Democratic governor says he has no regret. That's ridiculous. We should have lots of regrets for how law enforcement was hampered by political actors, preventing them from having the resources they needed to reestablish public safety. And there's a lot of mental scars from people who were petrified for themselves, for their families, for their children, for three horrific nights in Kenosha due to the failure of leadership by Democrats in the state of Wisconsin.
It's like he didn't want to admit that there was a problem when we all knew even more people were going to be coming, because 74% of the people arrested didn't even live in Kenosha or even in Wisconsin. They came from all over the country. But I wanted to ask you about the auto dealership that went up in flames and hundreds of cars were lost and destroyed, obviously. Did they rebuild? Are they back in up and running in Kenosha?
They're back up and running. We were visited that location yesterday. And I'll tell you, one of the police officers who was there that night when those fires were being set shared his frustration that he didn't have the resources to be able to stop it. He said he was there. He saw individuals start the fires, but they didn't have enough police officers. And you got to remember, everybody remembers the images of thousands of rioters on the streets.
Yep.
The entire Kenosha Police Department, the entire police department is just over 200 sworn officers, 200 sworn officers against thousands of people. Many of them, as you know, from out of town, they were overwhelmed. They were in, there wasn't the support that was needed. And our Democratic governor in Wisconsin refused to provide the assistance that was needed, refused to have the political backbone to actually provide the resources and reestablish public safety. And the result of that is it's spiraled out of control. And the recipe to solve this is pretty straightforward. When there's crime going on, when there's criminals that are acting, they need to be stopped immediately. We need to support law enforcement. And the lessons of this are learned over and over again as Democrats control our biggest cities in our states across the country.
Yeah. So how big is that issue as you're looking at the midterms? I mean, you're up for reelection, of course, but also those key races, Ron Johnson, Senate race, and Michaels' gubernatorial race against Evers. How big is the public safety issue? Because it's not just what happened in Kenosha. It's not just what happened in Waukesha. It's also the significant increase in violent crime in Milwaukee, as we've seen in most other major cities around the country.
You're exactly right. People are watching crime spiral out of control, and it begins with what the Democrats have done on their light on crime policies. And you're exactly right. There's certain instances that sear it into your mind, whether or not it's the horrific attack at the parade in Waukesha, whether or not it's the riots in Kenosha. But it shows up not only in rising homicides and crime in the city of Milwaukee, but that's spilling into communities all across the state. The crime rates are increasing. People don't feel safe in their homes. And it's very obvious. We need to support the men and women of law enforcement, and the anti-police rhetoric from the left, the defund the police calls of the fringe left, are what has put us in this situation in the first place. And these Democrats ultimately need to be held accountable. And that's what November is in large part going to be all about, making sure that people feel safe in their homes. Absolutely everyone has a right to feel safe.
You think that's, one of the one or two real key questions, real key choices that Republicans in Wisconsin are going to present to voters statewide, the public safety issue?
Yeah, I'd say you got three things. You got prices that are out of control. People can't afford the things that their family needs. That's probably number one. Number two is exactly this topic, that people don't feel safe, that crime is out of control. They're concerned for their families and for their children, and the answer is obvious. You stand with the men and women of law enforcement, and you reject Democrats' calls for anti-police rhetoric and defunding the police. And the third topic is making sure that our schools are no longer teaching children what to think, but how to think. And bringing back school choice is a component of giving moms and dads the opportunity to choose the school that's best for their child is going to be absolutely critical. I'd say those are our top three issues that we need to be out talking to voters about in the state of Wisconsin.
Whatever happened to Jacob Blake? Does he still live in Kenosha?
You know, I'm not exactly sure where he's at right now, but I'll tell you, people in Kenosha are just tired of the Democratic leadership in our state refusing to actually stand with law enforcement.
How do you?
I mean, remember Vice President Kamala Harris came to visit and visited him rather than visited families who lost their livelihoods because of the rioting?
Well, the Democrats want to have a narrative, and they work their tails off to drive forward a narrative. And so that fit their narrative. What didn't fit their narrative was that he was armed. What didn't fit their narrative was people came from all across the country to burn buildings and scare people in the community of Kenosha and injure countless people. The Democrats are always looking to drive forward a narrative. They're looking for one or two instances, leverage the legacy media framework that's out there and drive a narrative to tell their story, to push for more government control. And this is where programs like yours, Dan and Amy, are so critical, because it actually pokes holes in the Democratic narrative. It actually tells people what's going on in front of them, which was what they know, but it confirms it and says, you know what, crime's out of control because we're not standing with the men and women of law enforcement. Poking holes in the Democratic narrative is absolutely essential.
How do you handicap, because this is key, I mean, Ron Johnson needs to get reelected for Republicans to have a good chance to take back the Senate in November. So handicap Johnson versus Mandela Barnes for us.
I feel confident that Ron Johnson's going to win. This is going to be a tight race. But I'll tell you that there are a lot of folks that have historically voted for Democrats that are taking a second look this time. I got gerrymandered in my congressional district. We added in the city of Beloit right across the state line, north of Rockford, a city that voted 70% almost for Barack Obama, 69.5%. We had a room packed when Ron Johnson and I came down and did a rally. And it's a lot of folks that have historically voted for Democrats that are saying, you know, enough's enough. I can't afford the things my family needs. Our communities aren't safe. My kids' schools aren't working correctly. We're going to change course. We're going to take a second look at the Republicans. And those are the folks that we need to turn and say, hey, we got the answers to the challenges of the day. And if we're successful in that, we could have a really big, overwhelming victory come November.
He is Brian Steil. He's a congressman from Wisconsin's first, right across the border over the Cheddar Curtain in Kenosha, as he was describing. Brian Steil, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Of course, we're going to talk about the expected announcement today from Mr. 10% that we're all going to pay for the worthless college degrees of the many. That's the way that Mr. 10% gives back with other people's money. But I would feel like I'm cheating our friend Steve Moore if I didn't first give him a chance to respond to something we talked about a bit earlier in the week. Just one of those wonderful, instant classic quality statements from Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm about all of the magnificence and munificence contained in the skinny Green New Deal, not just for buying cars you can't afford, but also for buying solar panels and appliances you can't afford.
Well, number one, for your home, yes, there are significant incentives in this bill, which is great, to reduce people's energy costs on a monthly basis. So if you are low income, you can get your home entirely weatherized through the expansion from the bipartisan infrastructure law, a significant expansion. You don't have to pay for anything. If you want heat pumps, insulation, new windows, that is covered. If you are moderate income, today you can get 30% off the price of solar panels. Those solar panels can be financed, so you don't have to have the big outlay at the front. And when they're financed to the in a way that reduces your energy bill, even though you have solar panels. With this 30% off, it's a significant incentive. Same thing with if you don't qualify for the weatherization program, you will be able to, starting next year, get rebates on the appliances and equipment that will help you reduce your monthly energy bill by up to 30%. This is all about reducing costs for people.
You have 60 grand. Okay. You don't have 60 grand for a Tesla, but you get a Tesla and you get 12 grand back, you know, federal and state. You don't have money for, you don't have the 20 grand for solar panels, but you get the 30% rebate.
I mean, what world? These people are so out of touch.
Oh, and by the way,
never cease to amaze me.
By the way, you're paying for solar panels for low-income families. At the same time, you're paying off college tuition for well-to-do families and also underwriting their luxury vehicles.
Right.
It's wonderful.
This is the America I want to live in, sure.
For more on this, Steve Moore, economist, Trumponomics, and more recently, GovZilla author. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. I don't know why you guys are both so angry. I mean, everything's going to be free. Don't you get it?
Have you ordered your solar panels yet?
Everything's free. Your college is free. Your solar panels are free. Your Tesla's free. This is really Santa Claus, basically, has come a little early this year and left incredible gifts to people. By the way, did you see what, Dan and Amy, did you see what the electric vehicle industry did once they announced the passage of the bill? They immediately raised the price of the car.
Yes, by the exact amount of the rebate. Yeah, right. Of course.
So that'll make it really affordable. And then, of course, you know, the other funny thing about this bill, I mean, it's an absolutely atrocious bill. It is an embarrassment. And any Democrat who voted for it, which was every Democrat in Congress, should be ashamed of themselves. But they had a big problem where they wanted to pass this, you know, this bill that could encourage everybody to buy an electric vehicle. But then they realized the problem, which is, guess where 75% of the batteries are made?
China.
China, yeah. So they said, oops, that's a problem. So then they said, okay, you only get the subsidy if you buy a car with a battery made in the United States. And then the car companies went absolutely ape because they said, wait a minute, we can't make the cars with batteries in the United States. So I don't know how they're gonna square that circle, but we are living in a fantasy land, folks. This administration is going to bankrupt our country. The idea that we're going to pay people, I love this term, forgiveness. Yeah. Don't you love that term?
Like they committed a crime. We forgive you.
Their sin of going to college. Yeah, right.
But here's,
and by the way, how many, let's just get right down to the crux of this. How many people in the future do you think will ever repay a student loan?
Well, wait, no. See, yeah, that's right. No. This was what pisses me off because I paid student loans. I was making my first job, I made $10,000 a year. And I still, yeah. I just made sacrifices so that I could pay my student loan because that's what I signed up to do. And that builds character.
And now
my kids are like, no, this is great, Bernie. This is the Bernie Sanders, vision. Yeah. That's why all the young kids like Bernie Sanders because they don't want to have to pay off this debt. And we shouldn't forgive them because they signed up, they agreed to pay for it in the first place.
And also, I mean, I think this is a great point. Like, if Amy Jacobson can pay for her worthless degree from Iowa, everybody else can pay for their worthless degree too.
So, I mean, this is really the crux of the matter, though. Because my wife was in the same situation when she went to UCLA. She had loans, and she didn't make a whole lot of money when she graduated from college, and yet she paid off the loan. And what kind of a lesson are we teaching young people? Yeah. By the way, I'm having problems paying my mortgage. You guys think you could help me out on that? What about my credit card debt? That's pretty high too.
Yeah.
So Dan, you're not saying anything, Dan. Right. Can you help me out?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I mean,
well, we have a new rental assistance program in Chicago where 500 families get $500 a month. Just because it's an election
year. There was an article in the New York Times about a year ago, and I cut it out, and it said this was a Sunday New York Times headline. It said Biden is proposing cradle to grave government, and really that's what this is.
Breaking news.
Uncle Sam is going to take care of everything for you. You don't have to pay for that. It's all free.
The thing too is
modern monetary theory.
Yeah. What does it say about college though? Oh. What are we trying to say about colleges? Are they fleecing people? Is this usurious? Is the federal government, since they control all student loans now, are they charging you serious interest rates? Are these bad people in charge of the federal student loan program, in charge of colleges? Because they're doing bad things, right? Because that's why the government has to step in this relationship between the student and the college. So doesn't this demand reforming federal student loan program as well as colleges?
You would think so. I mean, look, there's not that much evidence that the student loan program has actually made college any more affordable to people because it's every time they increase the amount of Pell Grants in these student loan programs, guess what the universities do? They raise their tuition. Why do you think it is that over the last 25 years that the student tuition costs have outpaced the inflation rate by 300%, and it's because the government keeps giving more money to the universities keep raising their tuition, and then you wonder. And by the way, if somebody should be the co-conspirators in this debt crisis, because what is it? What's the number, Dan? Like $1.5 trillion of outstanding student debt.
Why don't
the university? Why aren't they held responsible for this? I mean, my God, they have these major North. You're right down the street from Northwestern. What's Northwestern's endowment now? It's got to be well over $10 billion. Why do they have to charge the kids basically almost $100,000 a year? Why can't the university do it?
You know what you hear from we've asked this question before. You know what you hear? Well, we're not liquid. Oh, really? Well, get liquid. Yeah, get liquid.
Exactly. We're just gonna, but look, I mean, here's another thing. I'm gonna suggest another radical idea. And that is, I think you guys may be familiar with, I wrote about this in the Wall Street Journal about 3 or 4 years ago, a college called College of the Ozarks.
Yeah, work requirement. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's called Hard Work U. What an idea, hard work. And here's what they do. By the way, Amy, do you know what the tuition is at College of the Ozarks?
I don't.
Zero.
Oh.
Zero.
That sounds fabulous.
Every student every student on college campus works 20 hours a week. What an idea. A 21-year-old should have to work while they're in college, and they work to pay their tuition.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you had that universally, I guarantee you, you'd get rid of all these woke classes. If these kids actually had to work for their classes, they would actually value it. My old sage mom used to say, I don't know if it was from Ben Franklin, anything easily attained is lightly regarded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. If you give it away to people for free, I mean, when I was in college, there were five guys in my little apartment we had. Two of us were paying our own tuition, and the other three either had their parents or they were on loans. The two of us who were actually working actually took our classes seriously because we were paying for it.
Right.
And so why can't we use that model?
Right. And
we workers for it.
Yeah, those kids at college learn how to money launder, then they go work for Jason Bateman running money for Mexican drug cartels. I mean, it's a perfect, you got ready-made jobs right there. Steve Moore, economist.
And by the way, while we're on the subject, hold on, one other quick
question. Okay, sure.
How is this fair to the blue-collar worker, the plumber, who didn't go to college?
I know.
Now he has to pay his taxes. He doesn't make as much money as probably the person who graduated, a master's degree. And now he has to pay more taxes for the deadbeat. And by the way, I'm going to use the word deadbeat. If you don't pay your loans back, you are a deadbeat. I know that's hate speech. That's politically incorrect, but that's what it is. We're rewarding the deadbeat.
I'm hoping that people on either side of this, that have gone through and have paid off their loans or who have not yet, and this is the one-time deal to try to buy votes in the midst of an election. I hope they see this naked ploy for what it is. I hope they do. I think they will.
Yeah, and I think they do. I think this is a big, big political loser. You're right. The Democrats think they're buying the votes of all these young people. But I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, and they're not just conservatives. They're furious about this idea. It's just not equitable. It's not just. It's not right. It's not teaching young people the right lessons in life. It's wrong for a thousand reasons.
He is Steve Moore, economist and author of both Trumponomics and more recently GovZilla. Pick it up. Steve Moore, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a great week. Take care.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Talk a little bit about the raid here and the fallout as we're in court, not we, but, the president at the Department of Justice before magistrate on the issue of making public some or all, it won't be all, of the affidavit laying out the probable cause argument from the federal government for the raid that occurred on Mar-a-Lago. And the motion for a special master that was made, filing for a special master made by Trump's lawyers, that they have till Friday to respond to questions from the judge about that request, what the implications would be. Jonathan Turley, George Washington University law professor, was on with Neil Cavuto yesterday. And I thought he made a couple of salient points here about more failings of Merrick Garland and how this has been handled from beginning to present. Listen to Turley on the specific issue of the special master that would be normally a retired judge who would come in and take a look at the documents in question seized by the government and decide whether there are privileges like executive privilege or attorney-client privilege that apply to those documents, to some or all those documents, and whether some or all those documents should be returned to the president. That would be that process. Here's Turley on that.
I think he should have asked for a special master. It's not common. The Justice Department has taint teams that supposedly sort out material to take out privileged information. But this is a unique raid, and Garland must have anticipated the outcry of President Biden's administration conducting a raid on his past opponent and likely future opponent. Now, that doesn't mean the raid was abusive, doesn't mean it was well-based, but he could have taken steps like this one to assure the public that this wasn't a dishonest sort of pretext to look for other things, and we're going a little extra than we usually do to assure you. But that wasn't done. And now, quite frankly, I think a special master is not going to have a great impact. They are clearly going through these documents, and it's going to be hard to get that cat to walk backwards.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and on two fronts. One, that it would have at least given the appearance that there is no skullduggery afoot. The fact that Garland didn't think to do that suggests the opposite, of course, that there is skullduggery afoot, that it is political, that these are, you know, the Trump rules that are distinct to him and only him, at least with respect to federal law enforcement. And frankly, state attorney generals like Letitia James in New York State as well. The other thing on the special master, I mean, in terms of they're going through them anyway, right? How else do we know 300 classified documents, top secret documents? And this is the additional point that Turley makes about the Department of Justice's manipulation of this investigation for public consumption. Take a listen.
Well, I think that the position is becoming more untenable for the public, because while the Justice Department has been demanding absolute secrecy, media has been reporting all these leaks from the government that are clearly meant to put the Trump team on the defense. And these are details that we would find in the affidavit. These are things going to the past communications with the Trump team, what they were looking for, what caused the search. All that's sort of leaking out regularly as they're in court telling the judge, my God, don't release one iota of this affidavit or our investigation will be compromised.
Right. Don't release anything. Don't jeopardize the investigation. Meanwhile, we're leaking to our friends in the press corps. Another example of dishonesty, if that description is accurate, and certainly it seems to be. I've got an idea, too, why Trump has decided to push for the affidavit's release and push for transparency in this, when you have some legal experts saying, you know, you understand that the affidavit just represents one side. That's just the government's argument. That hasn't been scrutinized. It hasn't been cross-examined. So it's not necessarily going to serve President Trump well to have that released. I don't think so. And I'll offer my theory to our next guest and see what he thinks.
Okay.
He is Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, combat decorated U.S. Marine, who served as counterterrorism coordinator on President Reagan's National Security Council staff. Served for nearly two decades as a war correspondent and host of War Stories. Also served as the 66th president of the NRA. Currently CEO of Fidelis Publishing and Fidelis Media. And he's got a new book out, The Giant Awakes, a Jake Kruse novel, the new book. Lieutenant Colonel North, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, good to be with you.
So,
if I may,
yes.
I'd love to get a plug into a dear friend who's a
yes,
Chicago guy.
Yes.
He's a real live American hero from Chicago. From 1968 and 69, during the war in Vietnam, he was my U.S. Marine radio operator in combat. And because of his brains and bravery, he saved the lives of scores of U.S. Marines. And back then, we called him Corporal. But after the war, his patients called him Doctor because of his skill in saving their teeth, their jaws, their smiles. And I'm blessed to call Chicago native Jim Leonard my dear friend, and ask you to join me in praying that he's going to beat the effects of Agent Orange. Even at our advanced age and disposition, we're coming down with this stuff. So
great.
Keep him in your prayers. I appreciate
Jim
that, Leonard. Dan.
Yeah, Jim Leonard. Yeah. That's great. And, you know, the dentists are always the best people. They're all small businessmen. They're conservatives. Mm-hmm. I love the dentists. I mean,
I
except when
dentists.
I have to go.
Yes,
other than that, yeah. Jim Leonard. Okay, thank you for that, Colonel North. What about what you've seen so far from the raid to present?
I'll give you a prediction. I don't have the gift of prophecy, but I think what you're going to see, probably not too far after Labor Day, because everybody's going to be focused on the elections by then, there's not been any accountability for the horrific events in Afghanistan, the disaster on our southern border, 150,000 Americans dying of fentanyl, a sanguinary crime wave, which you just, you know, the news report was last night, apparently nobody used a gun in Chicago, it was a knife. I listened to the news report.
Yeah. Fatal stabbing in Dan's neighborhood, yes.
Here's what's happening, okay. The far left, run by a troika, starting with the President of the United States, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Senate Majority Leader, that troika, Schumer, Pelosi, and Biden, are hoping that what's going to happen is there's going to be a press conference held by Attorney General Garland and probably FBI Director Wray, and they're going to announce at that press conference that classified, illegally held documents seized at Mar-a-Lago reveal a plot to overturn a presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And try to distract the American people from the catastrophe of their governance because they're desperate to try to hang on to power. Now, I don't know what the results of the November election is going to be, but I can tell you this. Nancy Pelosi will no longer be Speaker of the House. I don't think Chuck Schumer is going to be Senate Majority Leader. And I'm hoping that the American people, because we the people actually control what's going on. I mean, that's why I write novels like this, which is all about China, by the way, and how China is manipulating things. And does China really have some kind of control over this president? Is he compromised by what his son was doing and the money that was exchanged back when Biden was vice president? All those things they want to distract because what they're going to try to do is put Donald Trump on trial. And I've been there for a few of these things.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the things that's going to happen is there's going to have to be a stipulation about classified material. There wasn't my trial. The stipulation was 63 pages long. Both parties, the defense and the prosecution, agree that the following took place. And that covers, that's how they cover the classified stuff, because we're not going to put nuclear codes out of, for the bad guys to read. So I'm predicting that you're going to see a press conference like that. It's going to be distracting for about a week, and then Americans are going to remember what a mess we're in and throw the rascals out.
But doesn't the president decide what is confidential or not?
Yes. And Amy, my president, who I just still think is the greatest president of my lifetime, Ronald Reagan declassified everything. I mean, we had, now there were some redactions, there were certain names taken out and things like that of people were, I compromised other people. I bribed people to stay on our side. I bribed people using not our money, but other people's money. I went out there and blackmailed people. Is this president being blackmailed? And so some names were taken out of that, and both sides knew who they were, but we didn't put it out in public. And that's how they're going to handle all this kind of thing. The remarkable thing is there's been no prosecution whatsoever of what Hunter Biden did or didn't do. And all those kinds of things make the American people very distrustful of our government. I know that some people are out there advocating that the FBI be dissolved and turned into five different agencies. Stop. Don't do that. Because I'm drinking coffee out of a mug sent to me by one of the FBI agents who alerted my family that six terrorists were on their way to my house to kill them because I wasn't home. Okay?
Wow.
Here's what it says, and this is a replacement for the one that I dropped here 2 weeks ago. Good morning, sir. I see the assassins have failed again. That's what's on this mug. That was given to me by the FBI agent who called my wife, and they sent vehicles to get my wife and kids out of the house before the terrorists got there. So I'm not one who wants to do away with the FBI. I want leadership with integrity at the top of the government. We don't have that today.
Yeah.
We need leadership at the top of the Justice Department. Ed Meese had integrity. Ed Meese said, declassify it all. And the only parts that were left redacted in all those documents. I mean, there's a spy museum in Washington, D.C. that was the original wallpaper in it was all the thousands of pages of top secret stuff that had been declassified.
Right.
And you'd see the redactions in it. That was the wallpaper.
Well, so, I mean, there's a couple things there. One, with respect to the FBI, you know, I mean, I don't think that there's an argument being made by those, by serious people who are talking about the need to rethink how the agency operates, what its mission is, and the scope of power that it should enjoy, not to mention the seriousness or effectiveness of congressional oversight, because these agencies have sort of become independent operators. The oversight is in name only, And I mean, there's a strong case to be made, and it was made on the pages of the Wall Street Journal yesterday by veterans of the Reagan administration, the Justice Department, yep. David Rifkin and Lee Casey. The FBI had no legally valid cause for the raid under the Presidential Records Act, and they gave a nice history of presidential record keeping. And, yep. and this follows, you know, decades of very high profile catastrophes at the hands of the FBI. And so it's not to say that, you know, these agents like those that saved your family are not good people and that's not the most of them. But still, I think it's a legitimate question to ask whether personnel changes at the top is going to be enough.
Well, what we really need to do is we need to have a government that at the top of every federal agency and department, you've got people of integrity. We don't have that today, Dan.
Yeah.
And we've not, you can go back, you know, two or three administrations and find how difficult it is to get real good leaders in. I mean, it's incredibly disabling to have the kinds of leadership of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all of our intelligence agencies that has absolutely no integrity whatsoever. I mean, they don't.
Yeah, they're all auditioning for MSNBC gigs.
Oh, yeah, exactly. or the other network. What are the three letters?
Yeah, right.
So
let me ask you about Trump, though, since you've been through this. And, you know, the idea, hey, you know, he better understand what he's getting into. His lawyers, you know, making this stuff public, it's not going to reflect well on him because it's just the government's case. There's no response here. And so I think he wants to try it in public. I think he wants to try it in public because he doesn't want to get beat up in a back alley. And he sees these agencies and these actors at the top of these agencies as the sort of thugs that beat people up in a back alley, but don't do well when they're forced out into the public arena the way Merrick Garland was last week. And he didn't do very well. So I think this is, you know, a proper positioning for Trump and his legal team. There may be some short-term fighting it out over interpretations of what will be released for the affidavit, just as there was last week with the property receipt after the raid. But he does much better in public than he does trying to let the process play out behind closed doors.
Well, but ultimately their goal is to put him on trial.
Oh, I know.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No
and
question.
So good lawyers are going to say, here's things you can say and here's things you better not say.
Right.
And leading up to it, because I did learn that. My ordeal went on for 5 years,
wow.
And I was a young guy. His ordeal is going to go on for that length of time because they're trying to ruin the man, not just because they fear him running for president again, but because they hate him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Look, everybody stands back, takes a deep breath, and looks at what he did in the 4 years he had to do it, it's amazing he got so much done that was done so well. And I'll give you one of the problems that we've got right today is the United States Armed Forces are in such disarray because of the failures of leadership at the five-sided wastebasket that we call the Pentagon that no service except the Marine Corps is meeting its enlistment and reenlistment goals. Why is the Marine Corps the only one that's making it? Because the end strength of the Marine Corps has been cut by tens of thousands of people. They've thrown them out of the Marine Corps. I mean, it's the headline obviously came out of the Pentagon. The Marines are making their end strengths. Well, they're not, because the United States Marine Corps is being very seriously damaged by the reorganization that's underway right now. And there's not a senior officer in the armed forces of the United States with 3 stars or above that wasn't made originally a general under the Obama administration. They passed their political checklist and said, these are the people we want. So what do we end up with? We end up with wokeism. We end up with critical race theory. We end up with gender baloney. I almost said the wrong words, but I mean, all this crap that is absolutely no help whatsoever. But the armed forces of the United States exist for one reason, to deter war. And the second reason below that is if you have to fight one, you better win it fast. And the Chinese are running all over us right now.
Well, before we talk about the Chinese, let's talk a little bit about Russia and Ukraine here as where we mark the 6 month point in the since the Russian invasion, so the war in Ukraine. And announcement is expected today that the Biden administration is going to allocate another $3 billion in aid to the Ukrainians,
which is a total of $11 billion then that we've given them.
So
Amy, we've also had Congress say we're going to give them a maximum of $40 billion.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're just trickling this stuff out.
You know, what's your assessment of our role so far?
Yeah, very quickly. We're giving them just enough not to win, okay? And win, what's win mean? Win means you put harken back to the pre-2014 borders. You take Crimea, and it goes back to the Ukrainians. You give them what we call the Donbass area. Make sure that the southern ports all work, and people will stop starving to death in Africa because they can't get grain and corn and all the stuff that they need, the wheat. And so what the Russians have to be shown, and the rest of the world, to include Xi, who is the real enemy to us, into the world, that you cannot destroy the sovereignty of a neighboring nation. Get the message, Mr. Xi, and we're going to back the Ukrainians in doing just that. The Ukrainians don't want any part of Russia. I mean, Zelensky is very clear about that. Zelensky's even agreed, we don't really need to be part of NATO, but we do want to be part of the European Union. We want the open borders for trade going back and forth around the rest of Europe. And we'd like to be able to bring in Israeli natural gas. Well, that means you have to have the ability to ship it and the ability to use it, whether you put a pipelines in or whether you do it with liquid natural gas transfer points. But what I'm saying to you is that the lesson that has to come out of this is that we're going to give the Ukrainians enough, not just to not win, not just to stop threatening provocations with Putin, but we're going to give them enough to win, and that means restoring their borders. And this administration is afraid of that because they're afraid of themselves. They look in the mirror and they see Putin, and they say, don't provoke him. He's going to start a nuclear war. Everybody, look, if Putin gave the order this morning to use nuclear weapons, when that message got transferred downline to the people who have to push the button, it wouldn't happen. There have been enough mutinies that have occurred in the Russian army as a consequence of what happened 6 months ago and all that's happened since those 6 months, that there's going to be some very senior officers say, I see the message. Don't activate what's called the permissive action links. And then that's the ability to launch a nuclear weapon. I hope I didn't just give away classified information, because that's always been one of the concerns about the Russian arsenal. Not that somebody's going to go crazy and push the button. It's that they wouldn't.
Merrick Garland and Chris Ray will be in touch with you on that.
And then we'll get subpoenaed.
Before we let you go, give us a synopsis. You've alluded to it, but give us a synopsis on the new book, The Giant Awakes, a Jay Cruz novel.
So Jay Cruz is a real person. That's not his real name. And all of my books, all my novels and my nonfiction books are factual. These are things that actually really do happen. And so Jay Cruz is a real person. It's just not his real name. Because in a novel, you change enough the dates, times, places, and names, you can make a novel out of it. And then they can't lock you up for giving away classified information. And so that's what I've done in every one of my novels. And he is a real person. He is the kind of person who would send me that mug that I just read from. And that's the kind of people that I love and admire. So I've kept company with heroes all my life. This is a true story about a real hero and the kinds of things that they do to take on the giant. By the way, the title of the book, Giant Awakes, is actually a term used by a famous general, Napoleon Bonaparte, in the 1800s. So it's a fun read, but it's also kind of scary.
New book, the new book from Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, The Giant Awakes, a Jay Cruz novel. You know who he is. Now you know what he's currently doing. He's the CEO of Fidelis Publishing and Fidelis Media. The Giant Awakes, pick it up. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
FaithfulTex.com. It's cheaper that way. Simplify, buddy. Appreciate it, Dan, Amy. Have a great day.
Thank you, and we'll keep your friend Jim Leonard in our thoughts and prayers.
For sure.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Chicago, all the way with CPA. She's got dibs, okay?
On AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We talked a bit earlier in the show about Mayor Triple Threat's race hustling in my direction, criticizing me for this ad that I put up via the PAC that I run involved in the governor's race, and necessarily includes Lori Lightfoot's Summer of Joy, because public safety is a combined effort, and so the lack of public safety is also a combined effort. Before we revisit that, she also responded to some of the other issues of the day, including the topic we discussed earlier this week with Ron Onesti.
Yeah.
The future of Christopher Columbus statues and sort of her general disposition towards the recommendations that were made about which statues should stay and which should go.
We don't have a lot of monuments to women. We don't have a lot of monuments to other immigrants and refugees. We don't have a lot of monuments to African Americans. The people who have over history contributed in a positive way to the fabric of our community, there are so few memorializations of those historical figures, sung and unsung, that I think we have a real opportunity here. So I think there's a lot of good that's come out of that. I am deeply grateful for the really smart and innovative people.
But here's the thing. So the bottom line, Madam Mayor, are you going to put the Columbus statue back up? And you're ready for this? She's going to get another commission going.
Perfect.
Then she'll decide. Because the first one came down with their, you know, recommendations for not only the Columbus statue, but other statues around the city of Chicago. And she's going to look into it further.
Yeah, I think you should have
another commission on the commission.
Best two out of three commissions in terms of the recommendations. At least a three commission series.
Well, she did say she wants to put the Columbus statue back up in a place where it would be safe for police officers to protect it.
Wonderful. I have a suggestion for statue too, based on the standard that she just set forward, the contributions to the rich tapestry of Chicago. Our next guest, a statue to our next guest, Chicago party aunt.
Yay.
Chris Witaski is his real name. He's the creator of the Netflix series. Turned into a Netflix series. Went from a Twitter account to a mayoral campaign to a Netflix series. That's a pretty nice turn. Chris Witaski, Chicago's party aunt. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Long time, first time.
When did you come out where, you know, people could
come out?
Come out, you know, because before when he called into the show, we didn't, you know, we were just calling you Chicago's party aunt. So when did you go public?
Well, I had to go public when the Twitter show came out, when the Netflix show came out.
Yeah.
So I was anonymous for many years, just, you know, operating in the shadows. Mm-hmm. But then I was outed when the show came out.
Well, yeah, when the checks start rolling in, then all of a sudden you want to put your name out there. Absolutely. I get it. So what material would you prefer for the statue? I'm probably going to get appointed to the second commission on monuments that Lightfoot is standing up. So I just want to make sure I've got the particulars for your offering.
Listen, I think how many commissions are there?
This is the second.
The second. It's best. I don't know if it's two out of three or three out of five, four. We're not exactly sure how many there's going to be.
Wasn't there a whole Sopranos episode about this? I think there was.
Yeah.
Because Columbus needs to be respected in Tony Soprano's family.
Yeah. But then, of course, irony is that the same people that want the Columbus statue would be also decrying the Sopranos for a negative portrayal of Italian. So it's complicated, Chicago party. And as you know.
It is complicated.
All right, so tell us how you came up with the Chicago party. What inspired you? What was your aha moment?
Well, it's based on one of my actual aunts who I spent my entire life observing and just, you know, taking in like a sponge. And that's the aunt who has multiple Facebook accounts because she keeps forgetting her password. And so then she just makes a whole new Facebook.
Oh, I see.
You know, with the Netflix series, why did you go with a cartoon? Was John Cusack not available?
You know, I have a funny Joan Cusack story. She owns a gift shop in Old Town. And I went in. So I'm on this new show, The Bear. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I have. I've watched that.
Oh, you're in The Bear?
I've watched that.
I'm in The Bear, yeah.
Who are you?
I play the brother-in-law, Pete.
Oh, you do? That's you? Okay. All right. Now
That's
I got
me.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have watched that. It's pretty good.
My co-star, Abby Elliott, and I, we one afternoon had lunch in Old Town, and then we went into Joan Cusack's store, and there she was sitting behind the desk, and we asked her what she's doing, and she said, I hated every second of my career in show business, and now I'm finally happy running this gift shop.
Seriously? She didn't even like being in Shameless?
Oh,
she's great in
Shameless. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so I didn't know that you were a star. That's why you were invited to the you were a celebrity at the golf outing we went to.
You've become an actor, so you went from a guy tweeting to producing, writing a cartoon series. Now you're an actor. You're like Seth MacFarlane.
No, the opposite, bro. I've been an actor. I had 12 years at Second City.
Oh, you did?
I've been an actor.
We should
yeah,
really
oh,
know
yeah,
who
yeah,
our
yeah.
guests are.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I don't, you know, hey, look, I'm not writing your unauthorized biography. I don't know everything you've done, for goodness sake.
All right, but you grew up in the suburbs, so when did you get into acting? And just tell us about yourself, since we had no idea. I'm sorry.
My dad took me to see Second City when I was 13, and I said, that's what I want to do with my life. Okay. And I haven't looked back since.
Did your dad tear up when you told him that?
Yes, because he wanted me to be a lawyer. So,
the genesis. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about the genesis of the Netflix series, and then also the series where you're acting, The Bear. People should check that out.
Yeah, so I did Second City for many years, and then moved out to L.A. And I just had a lot of time on my hands when you first move out here. Especially, it's like you're starting over. So I started this Twitter thing just for fun, and then all of a sudden it started to gain popularity, and then a production company came to me and said, this should be a TV show, and I said, I agree.
Yeah.
And so then we pitched it, and Netflix bought it.
Well, and then you've already been signed for a second season, right?
Yeah, so there's 8 episodes out now, then there's 8 more coming out in the coming month, and then we're waiting to hear about another season, but... it seems to be popular, so we'll see.
And the story behind The Bear and your involvement with that series.
Yes. So then I was on a Netflix show called Love that ran for 3 seasons. That was a popular show, and I got to know this guy Chris Stoer, who is the creator of The Bear. And so when he got his show, he asked me to be in it, and. Now it's like the show of the summer. It's like everybody's freaking out.
Are you going to be like our new Jim Belushi, where anything that's said in Chicago will have to include you?
That's what I said recently. I'm going to have a Chicago-specific career where I say no to everything that's not shot in Chicago.
Well, when you ran for mayor, did you get any votes? Do you know?
Tons. I got tons of write-ins.
Really?
Chicago Party in it.
Why didn't you demand a recount? We could have avoided the last 3 years.
It was the voting machines. That's what it was.
Yeah, right. It was
the
Zucker
boxes. Yeah. The Second City crew. Tell us about who you were at Second City with. I mean, there must have been a lot of famous names that ran through there in the 12 years you were one of the people who are
on SNL. Currently, Second City was the greatest years of my life. I did it for probably 12 years in the touring company. I lived on a cruise ship, and then I was on stage for many years. And I would close down the Old Town Ale House most nights.
Nice.
And,
although I got to tell you, the Old Town Ale House, I don't know.
It smells. Did I sound like a priest?
The frontal nudity. On those art pieces, it's just jarring to me. I can't look at
that
for two. Yeah, it's a little excessive, I think. But anyway, please continue.
I was on Second. Oh, so my good friend A. Bryant, she's on SNL now. She was in my cast. Vanessa Bayer, she was in my cast. But I was, you know, I was a little later than, like, you know, Jason Sudeikis and all those kind of guys.
Wow.
But, man, Second City was the freaking best, man. It's literally, there's 300 people sitting there waiting for you every night, you know, and it's just every night is like a party. It's great.
And now that you're, you know, big shot, Hollywood, streaming services, all this stuff. So are you going to, you know, stay in the neighborhoods? Are you going to, you know, stay in...
You in L.A.? Did you move?
Sauganash or wherever you're from?
Yeah. No, I'm from St. Charles. I moved to L.A., so I've been in L.A. for 8 years.
Oh. St. Charles.
And I hate it.
Yeah? Are you going to come back?
That's my goal. My goal is to split my time.
Okay.
Right. I don't miss the winters. I don't miss the winters.
No one.
Are you going to run for mayor of Los Angeles?
You could be the L.A. party.
You can move. Just Mitt Romney. Just keep running for mayors of major cities until you find one that'll elect you.
I should franchise the show, you know, because there's party ants all over the damn place.
Absolutely. Yeah. Chris Witaski. Oh, by the way, so you
What's
just because we had with the filing deadline is not passed yet. Just so we're clear, like John Cantanzaro, the FOP president here, you are not going to be a candidate in 2023 for mayor. Is that right?
I'm still considering. Never say no, okay?
Very good. Oh, great
well,
answer.
Will you break the news here on our radio station if you decide to run, please?
Okay, I will. You have my word.
Chris Witaski, creator of the Netflix series Chicago Party, and also check it out, The Bear.
All right, I'm going to watch that now.
The first season, I think, just finished, right? Just finished recently? Because I think I watched it all.
Yeah, it came out a couple months ago, and it's the show of the summer. Everybody's talking about it. It's great.
Yeah, it's a fun show.
Really good, right?
A lot of Chicago scenes. It's about a guy who comes back after being a high-end chef at like French Laundry to run the Italian beef shop, the sandwich shop that his brother was running, and the hijinks ensue from there. But it's interesting. Chris Witaski, Chicago Party, and thanks so much for joining us. Continued success.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Bye, Chris. Thanks so much. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Nice to hear that Joan Cusack was nice, that the Cusacks had one nice kid because John is a real D-bag.
Oh, when he didn't stand up for the national anthem, right? Remember
Among
that?
Other things.
Yeah. All right, so you've got to help out the environment. I want to play the whole thing. I'm going to play the whole tape and just listen to what Mayor Lightfoot has to say to you about how we can all make us, how we can all work together in reference to that ad.
After she called me a racist?
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
But to use the oldest racist tropes that there are to make the scary black woman even blacker, to show scary black men on TV and to say to the suburbs, i.e. the white people, you don't want this coming to your town, so vote for Darren Bailey. That is the height of racism and cynicism, and we don't need it anywhere, certainly not in our politics, and we definitely don't mean it if we're going to try to bring people together and solve problems. I believe very strongly in regionalism. I have done that from the very beginning of my administration. We have so many things that we can work on together: transportation, water policy, the environment, and of course, public safety. But an ad like that is so offensive, it shouldn't even be part of the public discourse.
It's offensive. It's
the truth.
It's footage of violent crimes from news reports, like the nightly news. It is statements from two suburban prosecutors, Jim Glasgow, Democrat, Will County, Bob Berlin, Republican, DuPage County. Not talking about politics, not talking about who they're supporting or not supporting, just talking about the Safety Act and what it will mean for the suburbs. It is just documenting what everybody sees. And by the way, with respect to that footage, some of it, it's not strictly black individuals in the process of committing a crime. Who are the victims? Who are the victims? Yes, 80% of the shootings and murders during the Summer of Joy, almost 1,200 shootings and more than 200 murders during just the Summer of Joy, more than 80%, both categories, as is routinely the case, are black individuals.
Yep.
So what about the victims? And what is insulting is listening to racial demagogues like Lightfoot and Pritzker pretend they are the protectors of black families in this city and this state. That's the real lie.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.